Transcribed.
Reminiscing, I feel you near. Once more, you're my love of yesteryear.
Yes, it is your old friend Singin' Sam. So let's just settle back and reminisce a bit. What do you say, huh?
With a nostalgic nod toward the Atwater Kent, we now present Same Time, Same Station, a chronicle of broadcasting's first half century.
Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
Tonight, an Obler Omnibus, Part 1. With extreme pleasure, we present Arch Obler.
I was going to school and writing short stories in Chicago, and we had problems in the family, and I got kind of hungry. And I listened to radio, and I said, I can do better than that. And so I wore out the seat of my pants in the reception room of NBC, trying to get someone to read some of my plays. And it took a long time, and I was seriously down to living on O. Henry bars, which were a nickel apiece in those days, until finally one of these executives whom I'd been after for a long time called me in and said, you wrote a play called Futuristics, and they're going to open up, NBC is going to open new studios at a place called Radio City. Since it's the building of the future, your play is about the world of the future, we will give you $75 for your play, for all rights. Now, it had taken me 2 months to write that play, and I remember I looked at him with my big blue-black eyes and said, is that all the money for 2 months' work? And he said, you should be honored to be on the network at any price. Well, one can't answer that very well. So we went on the air, and then I had trouble there, too, because what do you know? In that world of the future, I happened to mention something slightly derogatory about cigarettes. Now, mind you, that's a long time ago. And when we got off the live air, I was called in, and I was taken over the coals. Now, why that executive hadn't seen it himself, I don't know. Why he let me go on the air and then called me in. But I was told in loud tones that the commercials were wholly on the network, and any comment, even oblique, that downgraded the value of the product was taboo. I listen to television now where they show a commercial and then the Comedy Hour following does a satire on it, and I think of those naive days of Futuristics. But that $75 I got seemed so little that I managed to talk myself into playing a part on my own play so I could get another $17.50. It was terribly important for the room rent. Well, out of that play, the people in charge of Chicago's NBC, which was really the origination point at that time of all NBC's drama and soap opera and most of their programs until NBC got going in Radio City, they felt that maybe I had something, so they asked me to do some plays for Don Ameche, who was doing Grand Hotel and First Nighter. They were terrible potboilers, and I hated them, but I needed the money so badly. And Ameche was a very good actor, and so was Ann Seymour and Olin Soule and those people, Barbara Luddy. The value of those days, of course, was that I learned the techniques of radio by listening to those fine actors. But I learned nothing about writing for radio because there was no opportunity to use radio as it should have been used. You see, radio in those days was an imitation of motion pictures and an echo of the stage. No one really had used it as a theater of the mind, had realized that a few words, a sound effect, a bit of music could transport in the mind of the listener one to any corner of the world, evoke emotions that were deep in the consciousness of the listener. It wasn't until I was called in to do Lights Out that I really got an opportunity.
Ironized Yeast presents Lights Out, everybody. Of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly. So if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly, but sincerely, to turn off your radio now.
I took the job because I knew that the vice president who was charge of all that wouldn't be awake at 11 or 11:30 when it went on. And so I could really get away with, quote, murder, unquote. So instead of horror plays, well, one out of three would be an out-and-out horror play, and the other two would be the idea plays that I felt radio was ready for. The curious part, I had written these plays before, and they'd been turned down because I was told that radio was a purely an entertainment medium, and they didn't need any of these thought-provoking ideas. But on Lights Out, I got away with them. I got away with them too effectively. I almost was taken off the air permanently after the first program, because in my naivete I didn't realize the impact of radio, an impact that still goes on. There are people who remember plots of plays I did 20, 30 years ago who couldn't, under oath, under torture, remember the plot of the television drama they saw the night before. The reason they remember over all these years is because, I say again, it was the theater of the mind. They gave them themselves. They were the hero. They were the heroine. They clothed all the actors in costumes themselves in their mind. When the play went into the future, they were in the future. Whereas television puts it all on the screen, you know. You see everything, you give nothing of yourself, and so you don't remember. In the very first Lights Out program, or rather the first Lights Out program that I did, was called Burial Services. And one opens up on a family standing around an open grave. 16-year-old daughter has died suddenly. And I go to the mind of each of these people, what they're thinking, the father, the mother, the brother, the sister. And then I go down into the mind of a person buried, and she's not dead. She's alive in the coffin. She'd had a seizure, and as can happen, the doctors had pronounced her dead, and she had not been, had not gone through the undertaker processes, and now she was alive in the bit of air in the coffin and screaming in her mind, "Mother, I'm alive, I can hear you, let me out, let me out." And they're throwing the dirt in, shovel by shovel. I didn't realize until the mail arrived, 50,000 letters came in, an unprecedented outpouring, what I had done. And I can only tell you that after I read one particular letter that I remember over all these years, that I decided that there was an area that you didn't write about. A mother wrote me, and she said, "We buried our 16-year-old daughter yesterday. You just remember the rest of your life what you've done to my family." And I've never forgotten, I've never misused any medium I've worked in. Well, you would think that as a result of the horror of what went on at the network, as a result of that mailing, that I would have been thrown off. But the executive mind doesn't think that way. They said, if Mr. Obler can get 50,000 letters on a program that he shouldn't have written, think of what he can get on a program that he should have written. So suddenly I was given a free hand. It was a very exciting length of time because, again, I could range the universe in ideas.
Come to the bank with me. That's not meant as an order. That's the title of the play I've written for you. You see, I read a statement somewhere that if a man concentrated enough, he could move a mountain, so why not a bank?
Please, would you come to the bank with me, please? He's locked up in there. He can't get any air. No, don't get excited. I didn't say he was locked up in the vault. All they've got in their vault is money, and I don't care about money. All I care about is him. I didn't mean to tell you. All right, I did. You've got to come to the bank with me and help me. It's Fred Roth. He's in the bank, and he can't get out. Please listen to me. I'll tell you all about it. From the start, I'm a school teacher at the Matson High School. I teach physics. It's a rational science. Cause and effect. Cause and effect. Mr. Roth teaches in the same school. Psychology. The way of the human mind. But that's not an exact science, is it? The human mind. Not exact at all. And that started it. That's what started it. Mr. Roth said to me...
Well, speaking quite frankly and candidly, Miss Moss, I don't think very much of your exact sciences.
Two and two always add up to four, Mr. Roth.
Not where the human mind is concerned.
I don't understand.
It is my profound conviction that the potentialities of the human mind and body have never been realized by any human creature.
Oh, but there have been great men, Plato, Lincoln, so many scientists.
Yes, but only fractional greatness. Using perhaps one-tenth of the power latent within themselves. It's all a matter of concentration. I tell you, Miss Moss, if men would concentrate their minds to the limit, the universe would be theirs.
That's a very innocent start, isn't it? Just a teacher talking about the human mind. I thought nothing of it. Mr. Roth was such an intense young man. We had dinner together once.
You have a coffee with your dinner or later?
Hmm? What did you say?
The waiter wanted to know if you wanted coffee with your dinner.
Oh, no. No coffee.
Yes.
It's very nice of you to have dinner with me, Mr. Roth.
No, on the contrary, I'm grateful to you. You are a good listener.
Thank you.
You see, I've done a great deal of work in the weeks since I last talked to you.
Oh, have you? Please tell me.
Well, it isn't exactly work. It's more of a decision.
Yes?
I've come to the decision to stop theorizing. Yes, I've decided to put what I believe into practice.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, it's quite simple. The powers of concentration. I have decided...
The fruit that you say for the lady...
Yes, for the lady. Miss Moss, concentration. I've decided to put into practice my theory of concentration. Now, I don't want to anticipate, but I expect wonderful results, Miss Moss. I might even say unbelievable.
Unbelievable results. Must I tell you more? Please come with me to the bank. All right, I'll tell you the rest. The day after he talked to me in the restaurant, Mr. Roth didn't come to school. They told me that he had suddenly taken a leave of absence and that an extra teacher was taking over his classes. I was very disappointed. A week went by. 2 weeks. I decided to go see him. It was perfectly proper that I call upon him as a friend. Mr. Roth, are you in there? It's Miss Moss. Could I speak to you for a moment? Oh, Mr. Roth! Oh, Mr. Roth! Dad!
No. I'm alive.
Oh, I thought... Oh, Mr. Ross. Your face, the way you look. What... Doctor. I'll get a doctor.
No. I'm not sick.
What?
I've been sitting here for a week.
Sitting for a week?
Concentration. Practicing concentration. Concentration. The experiment was most successful.
Mr. Roth, why do you do these things?
He would be a god among men. I tell you, Miss Moss, that I am confident that I, through training, can become that one man in a million. And the day when my training is complete, I will be able to do anything I desire. Do you hear me? Anything.
When he said that, thin and weak and tired as he was, his eyes looked at me and I was afraid. For him, I made up my mind. Right then, I would get him away from that room. Out among people. Yes. He ate, rested, and then went out with me.
I don't see why I let you talk me into this, Miss Moss. I have so much work to do.
This walk will do you good.
But where are we going?
Well, first I want you to come to the bank with me.
I beg your pardon?
Well, you see, I've been thinking of taking a little vacation, and I need some money. Going to withdraw some.
Oh, I see.
I, too, want to get off someplace where I can concentrate.
Oh, yes, most important.
Yes. Have you thought about going out to the country?
Miss Moss, the buildings. Look at them.
Walking so fast.
Once upon a time, they were only an idea in man's mind. Perhaps even now they have no solidity. But they're just ideas hanging in air through which a man with single-mindedness of purpose could walk as easily as if he were walking through air. Do you understand me, Miss Moss?
Well, I'm not quite sure. The country would be a wonderful place to work now, wouldn't it, Mr. Ross? We went into the bank. The foyer of the building where the bank was. People. Elevators. Suddenly, Mr. Ross stopped. He stared at the wall. I said... Mr. Ross, what are you looking at?
This is the time.
Time for what?
I told you, didn't I?
What?
When my subconscious reached the proper point of incubation, I would know.
Know
that my powers had reached the point where I could do anything.
Oh, Mr. Ross, please.
Anything, I tell you, anything. This is the time, now. I must make use of that power now.
No, please.
That marble wall straight ahead. I say I can walk through it.
Oh, no. Please stop joking.
I will walk through it.
No. Mr. Ross, come back. Don't. Oh!
What was that?
Oh, Mr. Ross!
Hey.
Mr. Ross, that wall! Don't.
Hey.
No!
What's the matter here?
Oh, Mr. Ross!
What's the matter?
Mr. Ross!
Why doesn't
he walk through the wall? You hear me? He walked through the wall! You sit there smug and self-certain, don't you? It couldn't have happened. But listen, you pinhead mind, I tell you it did. I saw it with my own eyes. Mr. Roth walked right toward that marble wall and he went into it and then he was gone. Do you hear me? Gone. I mustn't call you names and make you angry, must I? Because you must come to the bank with me. Yes. Yes, I'll tell you more of just what happened on that day.
Now, look, lady, take it easy.
You get out of my way. The wall. He walked through the wall.
What? Lady,
yes, he did.
Said, go out,
oh,
lady.
He did. He said he'd do it, and he did it. He walked through the wall.
Lady, don't make it.
Oh, let go of
me.
Don't hold me back. I've got to get through him. Mr. Ross.
What's going on here? What's this disguise?
Where?
This this lady all at once. She screamed, and now she...
Tell him to let go of me. Mr. Ross! He concentrated his mind, and he said he'd walk through that wall, and he did!
What? That's it, Mr. Searle.
Tell him to let go of me. That wall! Mr. Ross went through that wall! I've got him!
Lady, my dear woman, are you out of your mind?
Leave me alone!
Hey, keep quiet now. Stop making all that noise.
Let go of me!
That wall is solid. Solid concrete faced with marble. Now, you'd better go home and stop disturbing the peace. Show her to the door, Regan.
So they put me out. I stood in the street. I didn't know what to do. And then I knew what I had to do. I would wait there until Mr. Roth came back. And he would come back. He had gone through the wall, and he must have come out the other side, and now he would walk around the building and come back and meet me there. So I waited. It began to rain. He stood there in the rain. Mr. Roth, I'm in a terrible thought. What if he... I ran to the door of the bank building. It was locked. Let me in. Oh, please let me in. Listen to me. You've got to let me in. Mr. Roth. I've got to get to Mr. Roth.
Hey, lady, what? Don't you know the bank's been closed for hours?
I don't care. I've got to get in. I've got to.
Now, take it easy, you. Hey, aren't you the one that's been standing out here?
Let go of me.
Yes, yes.
Mr. Roth's in there.
Oh, lady.
I will get in. I will.
Hey, lady, the door.
Let go of me. Mr. Roth. I've got to get to Mr. Roth. Oh, please, Mr. Roth.
Get to the garden. Are you crazy? You'll come along with me, lady.
I didn't get in to see Mr. Roth that night. No. All night and the next terrible day. No one would listen.
Now tell me, do you have dreams, Miss Moss? Do you think that people dislike you?
Asking me questions.
Have you often seen
over and over?
Other people disappear.
But when I tried to tell them about Mr. Roth, they started to say terrible things to me.
The fact of the matter is, Mr. Roth has disappeared. It is the opinion of the police that he decamped with the woman's money. Yes, took her money and ran off.
Took her money and ran off.
I didn't care what they said. I had to get to the bank. You know why? Mr. Roth had started for the wall, and I had seen him go through it, and he hadn't come around to meet me. So there was only one answer. He was still in the wall. And while Mr. Roth was in the wall, they were keeping me in this hospital. I had to get out.
And how are you resting now, Miss Moss?
Miss Moss? Where? The window. Nurse! The woman in this room! She's gone! Out the window! Nurse! Miss Moss is gone!
Got away. In the street. Still raining. I ran along the dark streets until I was at the bank. Closed. There was a dark doorway. Another building. I hid in the dark and waited all through the night until morning. Until they opened the doors of the bank. I went into the bank. I walked toward the wall. That wall. I wanted to run to it, but I walked. And then I was there. The very wall he'd gone into. Mr. Roth. Mr. Roth. Are you in there? It's Miss Moss. Ada Moss. Oh, Mr. Roth, please. If you're in there, answer me. They'll see me standing here by the wall talking, and they won't let me stay here. Mr. Roth, please. I've got my ear close to the wall. If you're in there, answer me. I can hear you. You are in the wall. I was right. You did walk into the wall and stay in there. Yes. Yes, but what are you saying? I can't understand you. Please, Mr. Roth, speak so I can understand you.
Miss Moss, please get me out of here.
Yes. Yes, I understand. I will get you out of there. Help! Oh, help! The man in the wall! Help me get him out! Mr. Roth! Do you hear? I'll help you!
Get
He's a man in the wall! Mr. Roth, he's in the wall! They put me back in the hospital. They didn't believe me. They didn't help Mr. Roth. I was very sick. I don't know how many days I was in the hospital. And then I was all right. They let me out.
And this is your last warning, Miss Morse. You are to stay away from the bank. You are to behave yourself as the good, intelligent citizen you normally are. Your last warning, Miss Morse.
And all the time, Mr. Roth was in that wall, waiting for me to help him. And there was so little time left. A man such as Mr. Roth, powers of concentration, he could and he did perform a miracle, walking through a wall. But even conserving his strength and breath and the way he said, slowing down the vital life processes, how long do you think he could live entombed in that wall? I had to get to him. I had to figure a way to get in there. Tell Mr. Roth to keep alive that I was working to help him. I had to figure out a way. There was a store across the street. A store selling paints. That was the answer.
Something for cleaning? Of course, madam. How much do you think you'll need? Oh, I suggest a pint. We have it here in bulk. Open it? Of course. You see, it's standard cleaning fluid. Lady, no. No, that match. Look out. Don't. It's inflammable. Don't.
Fire! Fire! Grab that woman. She set fire to the store.
Yes. In a few moments, everyone was so busy that I was quite free to go into the bank. In a few seconds, my ear was against the wall. Mr. Roth. Mr. Roth. I'm back. They tried to keep me away from you, but I'm back. Mr. Roth. Can you hear me? Alive. Oh, yes, still alive. Mr. Roth, what should I do? What?
Help me. Help me.
Yes, I will. I will. They won't stop me this time. Something. Get something and tear down the wall. Fire axe. Off the wall. Mr. Roth, look. Oh, if you could see, I've got a fire axe. I'm going to help you. We'll get you out.
What's that?
We'll get you out. The marble's cracking, Mr. Roth. I'll get you out. I'll get the air to you. No one will stop me. No, Mr. Roth. Oh, they don't want to help you, but I'm helping you.
Hey, lady. What are you...
No.
Again, give me that.
No, you won't stop me. I've got to help Mr. Roth.
Give me that axe.
I'll give it to you. I'll get you. I've got to free Mr. Roth. I'm locked up now. They locked me up. You've been my first visitor in weeks. You know what that means? All these days, he's been in that wall, holding himself alive with all his will. But sooner or later, if he thinks I'm not going to help him, he'll give up hope. And he'll lose his will to live. And suddenly, he'll die. Do you hear me? He'll die. Please, make them let me go and come and help me save Mr. Roth. If you don't help me, it will always be on your conscience, won't it? At night, when you're alone and you can't sleep, you'll open your eyes and you'll see Mr. Roth entombed in that wall. But it won't be Mr. Roth anymore. Just the bones of a man. Bones and dead flesh. And the worms. And the skull will talk to you and ask you, why didn't you help me? So I ask you again, please, please, won't you come to the bank?
Arch Obler once more. My thanks to Virginia Gregg and Jane Avello. The sound was by Bud Tollefson, engineer Dave Diller, music Joe Leahy, announcer Byron King.
Then I got bored with it. Simple as that. I got bored with it. I felt that the time, 11, 11.30 or midnight, it was broadcast in many stations at midnight, was much too late to reach the people that I wanted to reach. And I got together a group of actors in New York, and I bought myself a record recording machine. I always have to differentiate because, you know, in this world of tapes and cassettes, it's easy to forget that in those days you had to have a wax record and a special needle in it, and the bit of wax that came out of the groove got twisted around the needle and all that. But I took this group of very fine actors, Ann Shepherd and Raymond Edward Johnson was easily one of the greatest radio actors of all time, and I did a play that I felt the network should do, the kind of play. I took it under my arm, and I went up Radio City, and I went up to a man named Louis Titterton, who was in charge of writers, very erudite, charming man. And I brought along my own record player. Now, mind you, these were 16-inch records. They weren't the little 12-inch. So you can imagine me, little me, toting this huge apparatus because there was no such thing as a portable 16-inch player. And his eyebrows went up when I put it on his desk, and I said, "Please listen." I put the record on, and this is literally what happened. He listened to the half hour. It was called "The Ugliest Man in the World." He didn't say a word to me. He just took the record off the turntable and disappeared. Not a word. And I sat there for an hour, and he came back, and he looked at me, and he said, "You're going on the full network at 8:30 to 9 o'clock on Friday, starting in a month."
You are listening to Same Time, Same Station on KRLA, Pasadena.
It was a magic moment. It was a magic moment. It was prime time. It was like somebody saying to a playwright or a motion picture maker now, who'd walk in with a piece of film, and they'd come back and say, "You can go on the same time as Gunsmoke is going on our network," you know, or Flip Wilson, or All in the Family. Prime time was precious in those days. So they gave it to me for a sustaining program, and I was on it for a very long time. And it was exciting, particularly because I grew into the art. I knew, I learned how to use the sound effect and the music and the words.
Gun in my hand. Gun in my hand. In all my life, I've never had a gun in my hand. Smooth gun, hard gun, cold in my hand. Bullet won't be cold. Warm bullet, burning hot, hot as the blood. No, can't think of that. Turn the muzzle up and press the trigger. Trigger cold against my finger. Cold as death, but life is colder. Rhythm to that. Poet dies with final rhythm. Poet dies who never wrote a poem. Headline for the tabloids. Poet dies with final rhythm.
Ugliest man in the world, a suicide.
Poet dies with final rhythm.
Ugliest man in the world, a suicide.
Poet dies in final rhythm.
Ugliest man in the world, a suicide.
Poet dies in final rhythm.
Ugliest man in the world, a suicide.
Poet dies in final rhythm. No, no, stop. Ugliest man in the world. All right. I'll think the thing for the last time, tear the words around in my head over and over the way they've torn for 30 years. Ugliest man in the world, ugliest man in the world, ugliest man in the world. Press the trigger and stop it. Press the trigger. No. No, I can't. I've got to wait. Think it all out clearly for the first time in my life. How it started. Why it's ending this way. Think it all out clearly from the very start. Then press the trigger.
School today, Paul.
There's a start. First day of school. How old was I? 9 or 10? She kept me home, away from others. I didn't know why until that day she said...
School today, Paul.
I said...
All right, Mother.
Row on row of children looking up at me, staring up at me, gaping up at me. And then... One of them started laughing. Another laughing. Another and another. Laughing, laughing. I stood there, a little boy looking down at their twisting mouths, my ears filled with the sound of them making fun of me. I knew, but why? Why?
Ugliest boy in the world.
Ugliest boy in the world. That's why you kept me away from children, Mother. Kept me away until you didn't dare to any longer. Oh, Mother. Mother. Before you let others see me, why didn't you close your hands around my neck, put a knife in my heart, drown me, bury me, put me away where eyes couldn't see me, laughter couldn't reach me? But you didn't. So this was my boyhood. Tears. Tears without end. A boyhood of tears. A boyhood of tears. Took me out of school, kept me away from all the others. What good was it? I knew.
There wasn't a mirror in the house.
Not a mirror. I didn't dare. You didn't dare. Not a mirror. Until that day you died. Alone. So quiet in the house. I sat down. So quiet. I mean, suddenly. Is it the clock? We're talking to me. Yes, I remember. Look at yourself. Look at yourself. Look at... Look at myself. A mirror. I had to find a mirror. Surely my mother kept one mirror somewhere. Drawer after drawer. A mirror. Surely there was a mirror. A mirror. Yes, there was one, wrapped and hidden where she thought I'd never find it. Tore the paper off. I kept my eyes shut until the glass was clear, and then I looked. Oh! My face. Can I bear the memory of my face? Can I think of it even now? Gun in my hand. Yes, I will. I will. What did I see? What is my face? A brow? No brow. A thing that sloped away sharply, quickly, like a peaked roof half fallen in. Nose? A thick wad of ugly flesh protruding out between two close-set eyes. My eyes. Oh, my eyes. Mother of God, my eyes. Two tiny red-rimmed, green-flecked globes that stood far out beyond the lids and twinkled like a fat round pig's. My eyes, that was why they laughed at me, my eyes.
Ugliest man in the world.
Yes, I was that. No longer boy, ugliest man in the world. Not even tears could help me now. The world outside. At last I had to go out into it, make a living. Get a job.
Get out. Sideshow.
Step up, ladies and gentlemen. Step up, the one and only, ladies and gentlemen. Step right up.
Wasn't bad,
the one and only, ugliest man.
No.
That's what I said. Come on, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I said. The ugliest man in the world, and only a dime. A very small part of a dollar. That's it. Step closer.
I didn't mind. After a while, faces looking up at me again, staring, whispering, getting their dime's worth. Spieler talking, faces staring, whispers, snickers. I didn't mind. Why should I? I could get away from them. Yes, stand there in the noise and laughter and leave them far behind. Leave the smell of them and the noise of them and the twisting faces of them. Shut my eyes and leave them quickly. I'd be in a field, sun-drenched, face to the sky, the warm sun touching me, soft grass cushioning me, my arms outstretched. All around me such peace and loveliness. I'd lie there so happy. And then a breeze touching my face, and a small white cloud in the sky, and then another. And all at once the clouds were like a woman's face, looking down at me,
A woman.
There was a woman.
Hello, big fella.
Oh, hello.
Hell of a day, huh?
Yes.
She'll give you a big play. I mean, the yokel, don't they?
Yes?
Me, I'm a Sammy Morton. You know, the grind show.
I...
Not one of the strippers, you understand. I do a high-class number. You know, semi-classical. Should have been a long, hot day.
It has.
Nice walking out. In the dark. I mean, the air's kind of different than on the Midway. Yeah, nice in the dark. Awful nice.
Do you like the moon?
Moon? Oh, sure, sure. You been working in tenchos long, big fella?
So complete, the moon.
Boy, you sure pack them in. I heard tell you sell more pictures than anybody in the show. Damn sure they add up, don't they?
Your face. Did you ever look down from the clouds?
You mean have I ever been high? Boy, I'm high now. I like the dark, big fella.
There was a woman talking. They were talking.
Yeah, yeah, sure, Sam. What do you take me for, a chump? Well, what do you think? His face makes me sick just to look at him, but he's got a pocket full of dough. So last week I got a telegram from Mama. Poor Mama, the mortgage. And yesterday, while he was looking at me up in the clouds, I got another handful of bucks, and maybe in a couple of weeks I could... You. All right, so you heard. So what? What are you staring at? I don't like your face. You heard me? I don't like your face.
I did you.
You gave me a couple of laughs.
Love.
Love? Do you hear that? Love. Do you think any woman can love a mug like yours? It ain't a face, it's a mug, a puss, a pan. Go on, beat it. Get out of here. No more walks with me, big fella. I've had a belly full of laughs and I'm too... Hey, what are you... No, stay away from me. Don't...
Go on, beat it. Get out. Yeah, I'll get out as far as I could get out. Any place. Anywhere. Any place, anywhere. Get away. Yeah, I got away. Good and far away. Fields, grain, a farm. They didn't care what kind of a face. Just work hard. Work. Hour after hour, sweat, salt on my lips. Work, keep working. And I couldn't think. I couldn't think it was good. I couldn't think. But I'm thinking now. Gun in my hand. Stop that thinking. Gun in my hand. No. Got to think out my life. Think it out clearly. Think of that day. She waved at me. Was working. Bent over. Sun hot on my back. Grain thick around me. Filling the world. Covering. Hiding me. I straightened up. Something moving through the grain in the road. Climbing the hill. So far away, could hardly tell what it was. Shaded my eyes from the sun. I saw a woman on horseback. No. So small. Must be a girl. I saw her arm wave at me. I dropped in the grain. I hid. Leave me alone. The next day again, standing in the grain, a tiny figure on horseback waved at me. I dropped in the grain again. No more. Just the sky and the grain and the work was all I wanted. The next day and the next, a girl on horseback riding far off there in the road, waving at me in the grain, waving at me day after day. And one day, I didn't drop in the grain. I stood. I waved back at her. Waving at me. Because she couldn't see me. See my...
It was pan mug.
In spite of myself one day, I was hiding in the grain at the edge of the road. Waiting. For her.
wanted to run, yet I stayed. Wanted to cover my eyes, yet I looked. Looked with eyes as big as all my loneliness. Horse knew I was there. She didn't. She started singing a little song as she passed. A song without meaning, but warm as the sun. And I saw her. Young, lovely, young, lovely. The words tumbled over and over in my head as I watched her go by. Young, lovely, young, lovely, young, lovely.
I began to see her face everywhere. In the green, in the sky, and at night in the dark.
Ugliest man in the world.
Thinking of the loveliest face in the world.
I tried to stop it. I couldn't help it. I couldn't. The loneliness in me was a pain I couldn't endure anymore. Again and again, I hid in the grain and watched her go by me. Just a quick moment. And then she was gone.
And I was left in loneliness again.
If she couldn't see my face. Yes, if she were blind. I read a book like that somewhere. Woman never saw the man she loved. If she couldn't see me, only know me as I am, my voice, my thoughts, my dreams, ambitions. If she couldn't see.
Dangerous daydreams had brought me to a gun in my hand.
But I was lonely. I had nothing. So I had dreams of her, blind, not knowing my face. Mother in heaven, if she were only blind, if she were only blind.
Wish, Father, to the deed. That day, working in the grain, looked up. She was riding by.
Oh, so early. Why so early? A little hand waving at me. Then the rush of an auto. I ran, the grain tearing at me, holding me back. In a moment, she was in my arms.
Help me. Please. Help me. I can't see. I can't see.
Can't see. I dreamed it, prayed it, and now...
I can't see.
What have I done? What have I done?
Concussion. Nerve block.
No, no, I had nothing to do with it. Just a thought. I had only a thought. But now she couldn't see me as I was. Couldn't see me. Couldn't see me.
You've been very kind to me, Mr. Martin.
Music. Everlasting music in my ears.
Come here every day, won't you? It's so good having you to talk to. You've made these wonderful days, Paul.
Music, everlasting music, her voice, being with her, knowing her,
and she knowing only that of me, which had no ugliness.
You've such a good mind, Paul. The best I've ever known. I needed a mind like yours. I'm laughing, Paul, because you made me happy again. You, Paul. And I bless you for it.
Happy days, endless days, quicksilver days. Then
the day.
Paul, I've been waiting for you.
I wanted to be here sooner, but the grain.
The grain? Is it very tall and bold now, Paul?
Very.
Remember how the grain used to keep us apart before I even knew you? I'd wave and the grain was between us. And I never knew you.
Is knowing me important?
Paul.
Do you know me now?
You're the only one I've wanted to be with.
Do you know me now?
Paul. Paul, listen to me. I know you now better than I could if my eyes were open. And twice as wise as they ever could have been.
Well, lovely.
And so are you.
You're going to see me.
Oh. When people have talked together as much as you and I, every little hope and hurt, dream and plan, don't they know more than if they looked at faces? And what do you look like, Paul? No. Let me guess. I've sat here in the dark and seen your face so many times before me.
My face?
Yes. Let me tell you. It's a large, virile face. A face that matches up with all the strength of you. Strong, straight mouth. A firm chin. A skin brown, yet soft. A straight nose that's not too small. It's not too large. And then your eyes.
Eyes?
Oh, yes, your eyes. They're large and dark and gentle. Gentle is the way of you, Paul. Well, how close was I to knowing you?
Give me your hand.
No. No, I don't want to touch your face.
You...
Later, yes. Not now, Paul. I want you to read me something.
Read?
Yes. So strange we were talking about faces when I have this book for you to read to me. Look. Do you know the book, Paul?
Cyrano de...
Yes. Brave Cyrano de Bergerac. You've read the play, of course.
I never have.
Oh, then I envy you. I wish I'd never read it so that I could read... hear it all over again. Please read it for me. Here, start any place. Read, Paul.
Thou lovest her. Tell her. For I do surmise thou art a hero in her eyes.
That was Le Bray, Cyrano's friend. Now go on, read Cyrano's speech.
Nay. Shall I woo the loveliest maid in France? Look at me, friend. With my poor, big devil of a nose. I dream, even I, of walking neath that beam, loving, beloved.
Oh, you read it with your heart, Paul.
He was ugly.
Oh, the rest of him is beauty, just his nose. Read Cyrano's lines, and I'll try to remember Roxane's. She was the woman he loved, and he never dared tell her of his love because of his ugliness. Read, Paul. The top of the page. Roxane calls, sister. Oh, sister. Read, Paul.
No. Call no one here. And you come back. I should have gone away. I long for harmony to end my day.
I love you. Live.
In fairy tales long since, the princess said that. And the ugly prince lost all his plainness in that sudden sun. But see, I finish as I was begun.
I made your grief. I.
You made my bliss. I lacked all woman's kindness. Even this. My mother found me ugly. And I had no sister. Lest they mock an ugly lad, I shunned all women. You became my friend. One soft gown brushed my past before the end.
Paul. Paul. You cried.
Cry? What is there to cry about?
It's true. There's no reason to cry. It's just a play. In life, no man could be such a fool.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. No, Paul, don't. I haven't had a chance to tell you. My eyes. An operation, and I'll see you again. That's why I didn't want to see your face with my hands. I'll see you with my eyes, Paul. See you with my eyes. See you with my eyes.
See you again. See you again. See what?
A face to laugh at.
Ugliest man in the world.
A face to jeer at.
Put hand in mug.
A face to shout at, but not to love. Not to love. Never will I, so long as I am master, let beauty so divine meet such disaster. Ugliness, mar perfection, Cyrano. Read you 1,000 times because she read you. The author gave you a paper nose, but my ugliness is flesh and blood. Flesh and blood to see, to hate. She'll never see me, never, never. Lift the muzzle. Press the trigger. Trigger cold against my finger, cold as death, but life is colder. Thoughts in my mind like a whirling circle.
Ugliest man in the world. Ugliest man.
Press the trigger. Press the trigger. Press the trigger.
Paul.
Who is it?
Paul. Paul, where's the light?
You see.
It's been weeks. I've been searching. Where's the light, Paul?
Forget me.
So dark. In your hand. Oh, Paul.
I wasted too much time thinking.
Oh, my dear.
Forget me, I tell you. You knew me in the dark. Well, now it's light for you, and I'm not meant for the light. Forget me.
I want to know you. In the light, your ugliness. Yes, Paul. I've known. First, when you cried with Cyrano. Then I asked the others, and they told me.
But you don't know. My face, a thing.
A thing apart as my blindness was apart from me. I love you.
Love?
Love you. Yes. I love you.
You don't know.
But I will know. Turn on the light, Paul. I'm not afraid. Turn on the light. I love you. Live. For me.
In fairy tales, long since, the princess said that. And the ugly prince lost all his plainness in that sudden sun.
The play is ended. The players, Raymond Edward Johnson and Ann Shepherd.
What are the great things of that time of radio drama? Was the stable, you'll pardon the word, of actors that grew up out of the medium. They were unique. They were special of their time. They could be, you could hand them a script, and invariably, without any direction, you'd get a par excellent characterization. Of course, this wasn't true of all, but the ones that I'm talking about, Lorraine Tuttle's, Mercedes McCambridge, Howard Duff, Elliot Lewis, Hal Perry, Lou Merrill, these were people who, it was almost as if they were born for the medium. Not that they haven't, some of them haven't done well in motion pictures and television. But radio was their time to glow. Hans Conried was another. One could ask Hans Conried or Hal Perry in the same script to play a Chinese, an old man, and a lover. And I defy anybody to tell me where they were doubling or tripling. Sometimes it was terribly amusing, this ability of theirs to pick up a character immediately out of the story. I remember we were doing a lights-out rehearsal, sitting around a table and reading the script, and my secretary walked into the room and said, "Mr. Obler, here is the script for next week." And I said, "Next week, what am I doing?" He said, "Oh, the one about the Chinese." Then we went back to rehearsing the other. And what do you know? Suddenly, in the midst of my rehearsal of that week's play, everyone acquired a Chinese accent. They were rehearsing for next week's play. Not consciously, because they knew that I only cast plays with the people who were right for the parts, but they were such consummate actors, their subconscious came right up there, and suddenly the Irishman was speaking, but they sing, you know. In radio, it was all of one piece. It was almost like acting on stage. And so they had an inner excitement and a continuity that resulted in absolutely superb performances.
Be with us next week for another nostalgic look at radio of yesteryear.
And now it's just about time we were picking up our members and moving along our way.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to these songs and the memories that go with them as much as I've enjoyed bringing them to you. And I'll be keeping my weather eye peeled. Yes, sir. Looking for you all to join us the next time we drop around this way for a friendly little get-together. And I hope that'll be real soon, folks. And until then, this is your old friend Singin' Sam saying goodbye for now.
Same Time, Same Station is produced for KRLA News and Public Affairs by John Price. Associate Producer, Cam Currier. Special Research by Martin Halperin. Next week, an Obler Omnibus continues.
I know you won't want to miss it, so be sure to be with us next week at this same time, same station.